Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee with Craig, where we talk about all things Second Amendment, firearms, firearms policy, culture, media, politics, you name it. We're talking about it right here on Coffee with Craig. So please take a moment, like and share this program, whether you're watching us on YouTube or Facebook. YouTube, remember to subscribe. Also Facebook, remember to follow and hit the notification buttons so that you guys are alerted as soon as we go live. If you want to just listen to us, or if you're already listening to us, well, if you already listen to us, then you already know we're on Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. You can listen to audio versions of this very same program in your car or while you're exercising or, you know, wherever you might want to hear my voice. Anyway, but make sure to do that. And also make sure to like and share the program with them. Also, please go to fpcgear.com, fpcgear.com. If you're looking for hoodies, t-shirts, sweatshirts, all sorts of pro Second Amendment swag, that's the place to go. Because every dollar that you spend will go right back into the fight for our right to keep and bear arms. So you can support the Second Amendment and you can look good doing it. That's fpcgear.com. Now, you guys all know, and I tell you this all the time, I even though the Firearms Policy Coalition is a nonpartisan organization, we work with Republicans, we work with Democrats, we work with those who are pro-Second Amendment or who are at least open to listening and trying to understand why protecting our civil rights, in this case specifically the Second Amendment, is something that they need to do. And, you know, one of the things whenever we're fighting these fights, one of the biggest challenges, quite frankly, isn't so much dealing with people who are professed and openly on the other side when it comes to our rights. Specifically, I'm talking about the many in the Democratic Party. But when we have to battle and fight one of our own, people who claim to be supporters of the Second Amendment, who claim to be pro-gun, but for some reason they don't seem to agree that protecting our rights and the rights of law-abiding citizens when it comes to the Second Amendment is important. And they happen to believe that, well, if you are a supporter of the Second Amendment, if you want to exercise your Second Amendment rights, well then your rights, your other rights, then become suspect. One such individual is Ohio Governor John Kasich. And anybody who followed the last presidential race probably knows exactly what I mean on a lot of issues, but more specifically on the issue of the Second Amendment. Now, there was recently a measure that came before the governor, HB 228, which took huge steps in order to help further protect the rights of gun owners. And unfortunately, Governor Kasich vetoed it. Now, they went back to the legislature, and their legislature decided that they were going to override that veto. And I wanted to bring on a friend of the Firearms Policy Coalition and a friend of mine to talk a little bit about how all of that went down and what exactly that means for Governor Kasich and for gun owners there in the state of Ohio. So with that, I want to introduce Dean from the Buckeye Firearms Association. Dean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great today.
Excellent, excellent. So, you know, if you could do me a favor, just kind of start off with, you know, you passed this bill, which, first of all, tell folks what the bill did, and then a little bit about, you know, the process of dealing with the governor on this particular measure and what happened.
Well, HB 228 was sort of an omnibus bill. And so it had a variety of different things in it that we really needed to get passed. A couple of the big ones was that we wanted to shift the burden of proof in a self-defense case so that you didn't have to prove yourself innocent. And I'll come back to that in a minute. The other one was trying to remove the duty to retreat. And there are a lot of other things in there, you know, getting no gun signs removed, having additional penalties for people who were, you know, doing straw purchases and so on. So it was a really good bill, a strong bill. But what happened in Ohio is that our governor, Governor Kasich, had a red flag law that he wanted to pass, and he wasn't getting support for it. So what he did is basically hold everybody hostage. He said, look, I want my bill passed, and if I don't get my bill passed, I'm not signing any more gun bills, period. So
If I can interrupt real quick. Now, sure. Maybe it's just me, but I know, and we all know that happens in politics, But that happened publicly. He publicly said that. And as I understand it, that's called, you know, vote trading is not something you're allowed to do. I mean, it's not only is it unethical, but in at least as far as I know, at least in the state of California, I know it's illegal.
Well, I don't know if it's illegal in Ohio, but I mean, he came right out and said it. This was not a mystery about why he was opposing 228. And, you know, he had since from about 2 years ago, if you remember the 2016 election, he was one of, you know, 5 million Republicans running for governor or running for president. And the media seemed to like him. He started believing, you know, his own press. He lost that election, but he still has it in his head that he's going to run. So we're not sure what party he's going to, you know, run with. But that's what happened over the last 2 years, is he stopped signing bills. He wanted to start positioning himself as being the so-called reasonable Republican. And everything just fell apart. And he's been working behind the scenes to destroy a lot of these bills. HB 228 was one of them. I mean, we were at the State House, and his people were coming down to the floor trying to peel away votes as we were trying to get this passed. So, you know, in one respect, it was a problem. In another respect, he was just sort of, you know, putting the exclamation point on his time in the State House. And we actually had a lot of Republican support for doing a veto override. So he actually helped us in that way. So, you know, when it came down to doing the override, he basically played every possible game he could. For example, when it went through the House and went through the Senate, finally got to his desk. In Ohio, you have 10 days in order to sign the bill. So if you don't sign the bill, it automatically becomes law. He held that bill for 10 full days. And this was right around, you know, Christmas was coming up. All the legislators were going home. They had booked flights. They were off visiting people around the state or in other states. And so what he hoped was going to happen was, you know, hold it till the last minute. Everybody goes home. And then the bill just dies. Our session is 2 years. And if a bill doesn't pass at the end of 2 years, it's gone. You start over.
Right.
So it was a lot of politics being played. Fortunately, we got the override, and most of the provisions of the law will go into effect in about 90 days.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's actually very, very good to know. Now, so I guess the challenge with that is first of all, what's the breakdown in the Ohio legislature there? I'm imagining 2/3. You had to get some Democrats to support you as well.
We had a few. I mean, we're like everybody else. When it comes to guns, it's usually Republicans supporting it, Democrats opposing it. It's very, you know, rural versus urban. I don't have the exact count on, you know, how many Republicans or how many Democrats. But, you know, we had some Republicans voting against it. We had some Democrats voting for it. Ohio is a you know, what they call a purple state. So you have a lot of support for firearms in most of the state because it's fairly rural or suburban. But then you've got the big cities. You've got Columbus, you have Cincinnati, Cleveland, places like that where there's a lot of Democratic support. So they, you know, they represent their constituencies and they generally don't like gun stuff. So that's just the way it works. But the overrides worked because When the bills were passed, we made sure that we had not just votes to pass it, but that we had votes, enough votes to do the override. So we were looking down the road when this was going to happen, because he said he was going to veto it. I mean, it was not a mystery. He told us ahead of time, if this passes, I'm going to veto.
So here's a question. So, I mean, so let's talk a little bit about kind of how this stuff comes to be, because, you know, you and I had talked a little bit offline about the fact that, you know, a lot of people think that groups like Bloomberg and Everytown, you know, they're only doing their thing in California or in, you know, in New York or New Jersey. But now here they are actually having a an impact in states like Ohio, which are traditionally pro-gun.
There was a time, and I'll say it was maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when our stance on Bloomberg and Everytown and, you know, all of these groups was, you know, they're really a pain. They work on the national level. They're really good at PR, but they don't actually get into the state house. They don't have a good ground game. So we didn't worry too much about passing bills locally. What's happened in the past few years is it started at the top. Everytown for Gun Safety sort of swallowed up a lot of other gun groups. They got a lot better organized. And what we're seeing now is that these groups, especially the group called Moms Demand Action, it's the ladies who show up in the red shirts, and they're everywhere. Every time there's a hearing, you've got a mob of these moms showing up at the hearing. We're starting to see lawyers coming into the state. We are suing Columbus and Cincinnati over the bump stock bans that they tried to pass, and every town lawyers are involved in those cases helping the cities. So we're actually fighting not only in the state house but in the courthouse as well. And we're talking about a billionaire, Michael Bloomberg. He's literally pouring millions and millions of dollars a year into every town. If you remember, all of these groups, the mayors against illegal guns and all of these other groups, they've all been sort of swallowed up. But there's a lot of coordination. Well, for HB 228, there was one particular hearing of note, and I wrote an article about this, where there were over 40 individuals and groups, and the opponent testimony lasted about 5 hours. It went late into the night. In fact, it ran so late, all the security in the state house went home. I mean, it was really astonishing. And, of course, the stars of that were the moms. I have a photo showing that they're just, from one side of the hearing room to the other. And it's just really astonishing. They've gotten really good at the local level.
Well, understanding that, first of all, understand that when they come in, they've already invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in polling and in messaging. So the first thing that every town does is they find out what messages resonate. What are the things? So what are the buzzwords? What are the, what are the key things? So first they do that. Then they go after the politicians, and then they go after the policy. And once again, you're talking about a billionaire who is spending billions of dollars. And, and when you talk about, quote unquote, swallowing up groups, these are all groups that they created. I mean, we're talking, well, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, they had to shut that down because their mayors kept getting arrested and charged and doing jail time. But, that's a story for another coffee. But
they're very well organized. Again, at this one particular hearing, over 40 groups and individuals showed up. And I actually have a list. Let me just tell you about something. There's a Fraternal Order of Police, the Ohio Association of Chiefs of Police, State Highway Patrol. All of these were giving opponent testimony. In other words, they were saying they didn't like this bill.
Just real quick, and you guys are experiencing the same thing. Is the challenge that law enforcement unions, people who represent rank and file cops, right, are actually showing up and advocating against the rights of law-abiding citizens. Well, and I'm sure you and I know most, that we're talking 90% plus of rank and file law enforcement officers believe in the right to keep and bear arms. And oh, by the way,
it's not the cops showing up. It's those political union, the head guys showing up. At this hearing, the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence, the Columbus City Attorney's Office, Amnesty International, the ACLU, the National Council of Jewish Women, the Catholic Conference, the Ohio Municipal League. I mean, it was just packed. You don't just get that many groups and that many people together by happenstance. All of this was organized. And, they were calling They were meeting. They were doing everything possible to put pressure on all these Republicans. And they did peel away some votes. So, I mean, it's like, you know, we were up against virtually everybody in the state and everybody out of the state as well. So when this passed, this was a gigantic victory.
And so it passed. It's a gigantic victory. And then the governor vetoes it. What was the response of, say, the rank and file Republicans there in the state of Ohio?
Well, I mean, again, the governor said he was going to veto it. So it wasn't a surprise. We were expecting it. And, you know, it ran through the House and then it ran through the Senate. And we made sure that we were trying to count the votes. You know, that's hard, but we were counting those votes because we needed a majority, not just a simple majority, but we needed enough so that we could get the override, because we knew we were going to have to call everybody back. So, you know, there was no surprise. The thing that was frustrating is, again, he held this until the 10th day and everybody was going home for vacation for the holidays. And so that really worried us. But several things happened that really helped us out. Number one, a lot of people were upset with the governor after, you know, all of these years. Also, there were some other bills that he was vetoing. And, you know, so you had a lot of Republicans invested in these bills. So we did manage to get everybody back. But it was a fight. I mean, it was a real fight, and this override was historic.
Mm. Well, congratulations to you folks, and congratulations on that. Do me a favor. Let folks know, tell our viewers a little bit more about the Buckeye Firearms Association and the work that you do there in the state of Ohio, and how folks can get in touch with you or follow you if they want to support the work that you're doing.
Well, I mean, we've got a website. It's buckeyefirearms.org. And actually, we're an organization that does a lot more than just legislation. I mean, we're involved in a lot of different things. We have an association, we have a foundation, and we have a PAC that works on, you know, elections and so on. So go to buckeyefirearms.org. We have a free newsletter. It's a very, very popular newsletter. You can sign up for that. One program that people may have heard about is called Faster Saves Lives. That's sponsored by our foundation. And we started it, I think, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And this was after all of these school shootings. And we decided, you know, we're tired of having the conversation about getting some, you know, armed teachers into the schools. We decided to just start doing it. So we actually run classes teaching teachers how to carry and use guns in a school setting when there's an active shooter. And there's also a medical component to that. So we basically teach them how to stop the killing and how to stop the bleeding. And we've taught over 2,000 teachers. We have another 2,000 on a waiting list. We've personally spent about $1 million on this program. And, you know, it's all nonprofit. So for a long time, for many years, we were offering this totally free to the schools. It's gotten so big at this point that we are, you know, asking some of the schools to pay for some of it now. But again, all of that goes to cost. We're not making money from it. It's not coming into our, you know, bank account. We're just putting it right back out there into more classes. And we're really trying to set the standard around the country for how to teach. This is really high level stuff. You know, this is not like a concealed carry course. This is all the kind of stuff you would take with really advanced self-defense training. And it's caught on. It's got to the point where, you know, school boards used to say, well, you guys are crazy. And now they're calling us and saying, hey, you know, our thinking has changed. Let's do a class. So it's really phenomenal.
Well, you know, we've had a chance. We actually did we've done a couple of shows on Faster, and it's, once again, it's understanding that first and foremost, you are your own first responder, and it's really taking that seriously when it comes to the protection of our children. Thank you for that. Thank
sure.
you for the program.
Yeah. And, yeah. And Buckeye does a lot more than that. I mean, we're into lawsuits. We do youth programs. Our foundation does grants. We did a grant once for somebody, a young person who was going to the Olympics. We've started a suicide awareness program here in Ohio, modeled after what they've done in other states. Masad Ayoub has signed off on it and said that we're doing great work. You know, we do a lot of different things. There are ranges in Ohio that need repair, so we're working with the Division of Wildlife. The way that I see it, the Second Amendment isn't just about passing some concealed carry laws. The Second Amendment applies in a lot of different ways. So, you know, we try to approach it in a three-dimensional way so that you're able to exercise your rights however you want, whether that's self-defense, hunting, competition, recreation, whatever it might be. So it's really important for us to be involved in a lot of different ways. And we just recently, first time we had done this, I wrote an article on as many things as I could remember that we did from 2018. And I thought, well, I'm going to have a little bullet list of this stuff that we did. It ended up being this really, really long article. And we were all surprised at how much that our organization does over the course of just 1 year. So if you're curious about our organization and want to see what we do, go to our website and read that, because it's really astonishing how big we've gotten and how all of this volunteer activity accomplishes so much around the state.
Well, I'm always a big believer with rights come responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I think you've taken that seriously. You understand that, look, the Second Amendment isn't just about my right to keep and bear arms, but it's also about my responsibility to make sure that I am prepared to do so, that I do so in a prepared manner, but also with that I'm responsible in how I do it, and that I'm promoting that to others and being there and being an advocate within my community. So thank you. You guys are the example of exactly what I think all communities ought to be doing. So then, once again, thank you for your work.
I appreciate that.
Okay, everybody, Buckeye Firearms Association. You guys take care.
Thanks.
All right, folks. Well, hey, that's going to be it for today's Coffee with Craig. We very much appreciate you guys tuning in. We appreciate you liking and sharing this program, telling your friends about the Firearms Policy Coalition. We are the home in the fight for civil rights. Got to use them or you're going to lose them. You guys take care.